Morning. I'm a little sick, so if I have to use the toilet paper while I'm up here, I apologize. Kleenex. So, yes. So this week I've been kind of sick. Our house has been, I've termed a house of death because everyone was sick. There was vomiting, there was snotty noses, there was all sorts of stuff. So it was not a wingway paradise. I was supposed to watch the rugby game with Marty, which would have been good because then I could learn and understand what on earth he was talking about earlier. But right now it's the Stanley Cup playoffs in Canada and the U.S., the NHL. So that's the big hockey championship trophy, and I've been following that. Is anyone following that besides me? Oh, you're a Christian, and you're a Christian. Okay, so the NBA playoffs are going on too, and but anyway. So it's you all look good, which is good. I'm glad because I was nervous after last week. I'm not going to lie to you. I had this vision running through my mind all night of you guys on the couch in your underwear, covered in Dorito crumbs and empty beer cans, yelling at the dog, "It don't matter!" And so you look good. If you're, you look real good. And well, last week we got introduced to Solomon. And you remember last week we talked about the meaninglessness of everything, of our life here. And so he's doing an experiment for us that we need to pay attention to. And he's doing an experiment for us because it goes beyond our capabilities. And if you were sleeping last week, here's what's going to happen. Solomon, who is king of Israel, is going to use his wealth and he's going to use his power that's beyond what any of us can fathom. And you'll see pretty quickly how true this is, to see if there's anything worthwhile under the sun. So he's going to test all that you and I pursue, and he's going to come back and let us know if there's any real value to it. And so let's just get after it. Ecclesiastes chapter 2, starting at verse 1. I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good. But that also proved to be meaningless. Laughter, I said, is foolish. And what does pleasure accomplish? I tried cheering myself with wine and embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. And I wanted to see what was worthwhile for people to do under heaven during the few days of their lives. So what we have here is the experiment has just started. We have the overview of the experiment in chapter 1, which we discussed last week, and then the actual experiment launches here in chapter 2. And here's what he said he's going to do. I'm going to test pleasure, all right? I'm going to test it. And what we're going to do in this sermon is when often people wonder, you know, Christianity is just this kind of cosmic killjoy. It kind of destroys pleasure. It says you can't do this, you can't do that. It ruins people's lives by forcing them to only do certain things. And so we're gonna look at this idea and this objection. And as you know, we're also in the Not a Fan series. So we're looking at things that cause us to be fans of Jesus instead of followers of Jesus. Solomon says, I'm going to go all out. And I'm going to saturate my life. I'm going to use all my resources, all my time, all my energy, all my creativity to consume as much pleasure as I can. And as much as I've thought about this, get my mind around the epic parties that Solomon is throwing. He's saying, listen, I'm going to devote myself to pleasure. And he begins to systematically throw the largest parties the world has ever seen. He's going to have the comedians in. I mean, he's inviting Russell Peters. He's bringing in Chris Rock. He's pulling in all the comedians. He's having the best food. He's rolling out barrels of wine. I mean, he is getting after it 7 days a week for an extended period of time. No one's really sure how long he went this way, but we know it was an extended period of time, and the parties were epic. Verse 4. I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself and planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. So Solomon starts leaving the party scene. He's still partying some. He's not going it every night of the week. And he goes, okay, I need to make something of myself. So he begins to build this house. Now, to give you an idea of the kind of house we're talking about here, the temple, have you heard about the temple? The temple was where the Jews worshipped God. The temple took 7 years to build, and it was ornate with gold and precious stones, and it took 7 years to build. And it was one of the ancient wonders of the world. It was world famous. And Solomon's house, in comparison, took 14 years to build. So not only does he build himself a house that took 14 years to build, but he builds houses for all his wives, which is an event in itself. But we'll get more on that later. So he builds homes, and here's what's happening here. There's a sense of pride and there's some sense of permanence that occurs when you finally own a home, right? Correct? When you leave the apartment and finally get that house, there's a feeling of permanence there, all right? And he's saying, I did that. I did that. And there's also something that happens to the soul when you work outside all day and build something, accomplish something, right? When you do your yard, landscape, and everything looks great, and you step back and you look at it and you go, oh man, this looks beautiful. And you sit and kind of enjoy it. You sip tea on the porch, whatever, right? Now Solomon, once again, not to be undone, says, yeah, I didn't plant a garden. I planted a forest. So I like what you've done with the roses and the geraniums, but I planted a forest. What are you going to do with the back 900 acres? I'm going to plant a forest. And so once again, Solomon goes well beyond what most of us can comprehend. In fact, to this day, if you went to Jerusalem, southwest of Jerusalem, you would come to this place where there are all these craters in the earth, and it's called the Pools of Solomon. And it's where Solomon dug these huge cavernous holes in the earth, filled them with water, to water all the gardens and national parks and everything else he built out. And so he moves on from this party scene where all he's doing is getting wasted, all he's doing is partying, all he's doing is having this feast, all he's doing is celebrating, all he's doing is laughing, and he moves on. He wants to make something of himself. So he begins to build houses. He begins to try to have a legacy. He begins to build gardens. He begins to build things that other people can enjoy. He builds wives. He builds houses for his wives. Sometimes I wonder if he did build his wife. Well, we'll get to that. He puts his hand to the plow and begins to work to make something of himself. And then he moves on from there to enjoy all that he built. So look at what's next. And once again, this is how life progresses usually, right? Verse 7. Male and female slaves, and had other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for myself, and the treasure of kings and provinces. I acquired men and women singers, and a harem as well, the delights of the heart of men. So we leave the party scene and we go to the building scene. And now we leave the building scene into the life of wealth and ease. And what he's saying here is, listen, I had slaves and slaves of slaves and servants of the slave slaves. He's saying, I didn't do anything for myself. I woke up at about 1 p.m., somebody cooked breakfast for me, chewed it up for me, and then fed it to me. I moved on from there to get massage number one. I moved on from there to get the facial, the pedicure. I mean, he's saying, I did nothing by myself. It was done for me. I sat back and enjoyed my riches and my wealth. And he's saying, listen, I took advantage of my wealth, of my clout, of my power. He's even going to say, look, I didn't download music if I liked it. I bought the band. That's what he said. He's like, no, I don't have an iPod. I own the band. It's my band. Not only that, he gets into what he's infamous for. He gets into women. Solomon had, anyone know how many wives? 700 wives. 700 wives and 300 concubines. You know, I think to myself, I have one wife. That's enough. I'm happy with one. 700 wives, 300 concubines. So 300 women just devoted for sex, and then 700 wives who probably were just devoted to sex. But anyway, so Solomon experienced in his life uninhibited sexuality. He made Hugh Hefner look like a rookie, the guy who makes Playboy magazine. If you would have brought up the Playboy mansion and Hugh's six little blonde girlfriends to Solomon, he'd be like, please, six? Pfft, I got married to six in August, right? I mean, this is a man who had uninhibited sexual experiences. He just did. And we're going to talk more about that in a little bit. Now, after all this, he's going to begin to talk about the experiences of the party scene, of the acquisition scene, and then the end, the just outright hedonistic scene. He's going to talk about these three and unpack for you what happened in those three things that he did. So let's look. I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all this, my wisdom stayed with me. Pretty funny text, because he said, I was popular. Yeah, I mean, you're throwing a party every night of the week for 20,000 people. Yes, you're popular. Now, this next part is going to be a pretty big piece, because this is different than how it plays out for you and I. Also, my wisdom remained with me. So here's what he's saying here. I never forgot what I was doing. I never got so caught up and so lost in seeking pleasure that I forgot what my goal was from the beginning, to see if there's really anything of value out there. So he never forgot that this was an experiment from day one. Now, if you're sitting out there right now going, experiment, eh? Ecclesiastes has already been written. There is no part two, okay? So if you experiment because I just want to see if there's anything good out there, now that Ecclesiastes already exists, that's called sin. Anyway, let's keep reading. Verse 10. I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. So here's what he's going to say. And I've heard a lot of Christians disagree with me here, but here is what he said. The party scene? I had a good time, man. I ain't going to lie to you. You know, and I know preachers sometimes like to come up here and say, that's not a good time. You're not going to have fun drinking and rah, rah. But it's weird. We like to pretend that everyone who doesn't believe like we do walks around with a clean apron. I don't know. I mean, it's just an absurd notion. Anyway, yeah, so he's saying, I had a good time. It's fun. You know, it's good. He's going to say, the party, great. Yeah. The building of the houses and the acquisition and the building of the pools and the planting of the gardens. I had a great time. The wives, the concubines, the servants, the cattle ranch, the horse ranch, the palace, the comedians, the music. I had a great time. I had a great time. That's what he's saying in verse 10. And then he's going to move on. So starting back in verse 10, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. I refused my heart no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all my labor. What did he get out of all of it? Pleasure. Momentary, fleeting, here for a second, then gone, pleasure. Verse 11. Yet, when I surveyed all that my hands had done and what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind, nothing was gained under the sun. Here's what he's going to say happened to him, and here's why we are in a lot of danger. Pay attention. A lot of danger. We're in a lot of danger because we don't have Solomon's resources. But I'll get to that here in a minute. Here's what happened. He starts throwing the party, right? And he has a blast. I mean, that first night when they're bringing in all those cows and slaughtering them and throwing everything on the barbecue pit and wine's flowing and the comedian is up there doing his bit and the band's playing, he has a blast. That was on Monday. And then Tuesday, they do it all again. And he has a great time. Probably not as fun as he had on Monday, but he still had a great time. And on Wednesday, they did it all again. And they had a blast. And on Thursday, it started to feel a little redundant. So they're like, you know, we need to do this a little bit bigger. So they got it a little bit bigger. And so on Friday, they do it all again and have a great time. And then on Saturday, they do it all again and have an even greater time. And then on Sunday, it kind of felt, yeah, haven't we done this before? And so it got a little bit bigger, and it got a little bit grander, and they got more wine, and they got more cows. And so on Monday night, they do it again, and on Tuesday night, they do it again, and they keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger until the party couldn't get any bigger. And so when they hit that huge level where they couldn't do anything else, they couldn't bring in any other band, they couldn't bring any more comedians, they had all the wine they could drink, they had all the food they could eat, and it couldn't get any bigger, any more entertaining. It got predictable, it got boring, and it became like a rut. And so he's like, this is lame. I'm going to go do something else. He's building houses, and he builds his house. And for 14 years, he works on this house, and he builds it as big as it will get. And he digs pools, and he builds a forest. It doesn't get much bigger than a forest. I mean, what do you go to next after a forest? Nothing, which is why you were silent there. So he does the forest, and he plants, and he builds. And he built 700 houses for his wives alone, plus his house and parks and gardens and vineyards, and there's nothing else to build. And so he's like, okay, I'll just enjoy it. And so he starts to enjoy it, and he drinks it in. But pretty soon, he's not doing anything anymore. And there's only so many massages you can get, unless you come to my mats. Anyway. And then he tries it with women. And then he tries it with women, and one woman doesn't satisfy. So he goes to another one, and then another one, and then another one, and then 10 at the same time, and on, and going 1,001. I mean, Solomon, when it comes to women, did not want for shape, for eye color, for hair color, or for personality. Solomon ran out of fantasies. Are you tracking with me? I mean, anything else he could think up in his head, done. So he plays it all out. And in the end, he's done everything there is to do, and he's going to say he's back in the same place he was before he even started the pursuit. Feeling like life was boring. Feeling like life was predictable. And being a little frustrated and on edge because of it. So, we've got to talk here. You're not a believer in Jesus, and you're not a Christian, and you haven't been to church in years, and somebody just invited you for this Sunday. You're hearing what I say, and what I'm saying Solomon is saying, and it's just resonating with what you already believe about us. You know that God's in the heavens, and he's like this eternal killjoy, an enemy of pleasure. Like he's just going up there, going, no! You're going to homeschool your kids, listen to lame music, stay home on Friday, or I'll kill all of you and send you all to hell. Because that's how I roll. That's how I do things. You're doomed to live in this little bubble of boredom all the days of your life because I'm God, I control heaven and hell, and if you don't listen to me, I shall destroy you. Right? Right? And the irony of that, to me is that God is the author of every good thing. Like, it was his idea. Like, I don't know when it happened. I don't know when all of a sudden he became the enemy of happiness, joy, and delight when he is the author. For example, in the story of Adam and Eve, he creates Adam and Eve in the garden wearing nothing. That's a great deal. The way God starts the whole deal there, right? One man, one woman, a bunch of acreage, naked. Go play, frolic, have a good time. Be fruitful and multiply. Now, how does that happen? How's that going to happen? How do you be fruitful and multiply? It's God's idea. It wasn't a design defect. It's his idea. Or do you think God absolutely flipped out when we let the grapes go bad? Do you think he's in heaven going, are you going to waste those grapes I created? It's his idea. He's the author of such things, not the enemy of it. I don't know when it happened. I don't know when the shift occurred that all of a sudden God's the cosmic killjoy, when there is not one pleasure under the sun that he did not create and ordain. Now, it's definitely been perverted by sin, but there is not one pleasure that you can name that he did not create or ordain. Not one. I don't know how he became the killjoy. In fact, I would contend that you've been wired for pleasure. There's this deep longing in the core of who we are that cries out for happiness and delight, and we pursue it from day one. And children are a great example of this. Are they ever? From the second they are born, they seek their own happiness, don't they? 2 a.m., 4 a.m., middle of the afternoon, during a church service, it does not matter. Give me a bottle. Give me my soother. Change my diaper. Give me some food. Entertain me. Dance for me. Dance for me now. I mean, you will entertain me. You will get on the floor with me right now. That's my home life. Anyways, now the funny thing is this never changes. Just the pursuit does. It just looks different the older you get. But the pursuit is always the same. We seek our own happiness, our own pleasure. It is the motivating factor behind everything you do, always. In the 1600s, there was this kind of freak show genius, mathematician, philosopher, theologian. Sounds like a great guy to be around, doesn't he? Blaise Pascal. Actually, he's considered the forerunner, the inventor of the computer. Thank you, Mr. Pascal. And he's famous for this quote. He's famous for a lot of quotes, but here's one that he's famous for. People seek happiness. This is without exception. Whatever different means they employ, they all tend to this end. The cause of some going to war and of others avoiding it is the same desire in both, attended with different views. The will never takes the least step but to this object, pleasure. This is the motive of every action of every person, even of those who hang themselves. Even the person who takes their own life does so in the pursuit of their own happiness. It is the driving force behind everything you do. So pleasure isn't the problem, nor is the pursuit of pleasure. So then what do we do with Solomon then? What do we do with Solomon who pursues pleasure with all his might and then comes back and says, well, you can pursue it if you want, but it's meaningless. It's chasing after the wind. So God doesn't look at us and go, I can't believe they're seeking their own pleasure. Rather, he looks at us and goes, they're not seeking hard enough. C.S. Lewis has a famous quote. He says, we are half-hearted creatures, fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered to us, like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. We are far too easily pleased. So true. Sin entered the world and fractured it. Romans 1 says, what happened is that you and I exchanged the infinite creator God for his creation. And when that took place, we began to settle for temporary, fleeting pleasures rather than what is eternal and soul satisfying. Let me try to prove it to you this way. 5 years ago, in your mind, all of you, 5 years ago, you had in your mind this picture of what you wanted your life to look like 5 years from then. And you thought that if you could obtain it or get to it, you would be happy and satisfied. And so for the last 5 years, you've put all your energy, and whether you did this consciously or subconsciously, you did this. And most of you just thought, man, if I could just get out of school, if I could just get a good job, if I could find a boyfriend or a girlfriend, if I could have an awesome computer, if I could make enough money to go on vacation, if I could get a car that actually ran half the time, if I could do this, if I could do that, if I could do this. And you begin to work that 5-year plan. And now the reality is if you've met those goals, you probably don't even know it, because you've already replaced that 5-year plan with a new 5-year plan, because what you thought would satisfy you has not. And so what happens is you'll work the next 5-year plan, and then 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 you will die and be painted up like a clown and be put in the ground. That's it. And almost all of us, whether we'll admit it or not, have bought into the philosophy that what we need to finally make us happy is more of what we already possess, and it's madness. It's why we shop, and we talked about this at length last week. You don't buy out of need, you buy out of boredom, especially if you live in the West. Oh. Nobody buys a new car because theirs blew up or got stolen. Right? It's insanity. You don't buy clothes because yours are done. I swear you don't. Nobody in this room goes, oh, I can't wear my jeans at all anymore. They've completely disintegrated. Instead, you go and buy jeans that have already been partially disintegrated for $90. I do too. I'm not saying there's you and then there's me. I'm saying we. And it's outright evidence that we live boring, predictable lives, and we numb it and turn it off by acquisition. But Solomon's going, hey man, I did it. Here's the deal. It's meaningless. All right, one of my favorite stories in the Bible is in John chapter 4. And the scriptures say that Jesus decides to go through Samaria, despite the fact that nobody went through Samaria, at least not Jews. And he sits down at this well, and this woman of ill repute, by the way, comes to him. She's currently, at that time in the story, is exchanging sex for rent. And she's showing up in the middle of the day, because if she went in the morning, she'd probably get beat up. A complete social outcast. And so she shows up in the middle of the day, and Jesus, a Jew, says to her, hey, will you get me a drink of water? And so she scoops up some water, and she's kind of freaked out that he would even talk to her. And she hands him the water, and he takes a drink. And then he starts talking to her about water. He says, you know, I'm going to drink this, but I'm going to get thirsty again. And she's like, do you want another cup? And he's like, no. This is paraphrased, by the way. And he just starts talking to her about water. And he's like, people are going to come to this well all day long. In fact, the same women that were here this morning drawing water for the day, they're going to be back because they're going to be thirsty again. And this is what he says to her. Pay attention. He says, listen, if you drink the water I'm offering, if you drink the water I'm bringing, you will never thirst again. And she completely misses it. Do you remember the story? She's like, you don't even have a cup. I had to get you the water. What are you talking about? What do you mean you have water? But this is what Jesus was saying. Jesus at the well to this woman says, I am eternal. I fill the emptiness. So all those men that have taken advantage of you for years, all the people who have belittled you, all the places you've tried to fill your soul and you've ended up broken and feeling worthless with shame and guilt, it can be over because I fill the emptiness. I fill eternity. I've always been. I will always be. David called me Lord. I am eternal. I and I alone, Jesus, fill the emptiness. Come to me and never be thirsty again. I'll tell you what I'm saying and what I'm not saying, because I want to be fair here. I'm not saying that outside of Jesus, you're not going to have a good time. I'm not saying you won't have enjoyable moments. Of course you will. You can go out, party all you want. You will have a blast. I guarantee it. You will have awesome fun drinking till your brains explode. No question. What I will say is that those moments are ultimately meaningless, and you will miss the holiness and the joy of understanding the glory and life fulfillment of God over your life. And so, just to sum up, one thing causes us to be fans instead of followers of Jesus. We become followers of stuff. Created stuff. Stuff that just fades into the wind. Remember who you're as a Walkman? No one. But at one point, a Walkman was even cooler than an iPhone is today. Yet you just, it's in your garbage heap. We follow stuff that ultimately will bring us nothing. Christ has come to offer us and to show us our purpose, our plan, and where we're headed. And so I just encourage us to not fall for the pleasures, which you'll have pleasure having. Don't get me wrong. But it will lead you down a path of destruction that will lead to your own eventual destruction. Let's pray. I just thank you for today. Thank you that Solomon here has formed an experiment for us.